explore with Dita? Abandoned for centuries. We've content not fired up since God knows when. Probably first built by one of the lost gods of the Pantheon. Yes, absolutely.
Can we go there now? I mean, we found him and that's great. But Dita might not have much time left. Diodatus could be running him as a partial fetch, breaking his memory structures, or just deleting the bits of him it doesn't need.
Ambrose went pale. That's a lot to ask, Leela. His flask was in his hand again. The shark hung between them, radiating danger.
I know. I'm scared too. But I don't want to lose Dita.
Ambrose put his face in his hands, hiding his eyes from her.
I can't, Leela.
You've got so much experience. Much more than Cassiel. We're even wearing your old exploration gear. We can jump right there. I'm sure we'd be safe. If we can find out where Diodatus is holding him, it would be such a big step.
But Cormac...
That was terrible, agreed Leela. But the psychoactive tech hurt his family, not him. His defences worked.
Ambrose didn't reply.
I've seen broken people, Ambrose. I've been broken myself. I know how bad it is. I don't want Dita to end up like that. We've got to find him and bring him back.
We should wait. Do some research. See what we can find out about this satellite.
We don't have time. Please.
Ambrose turned away.
You said it was time to move on from the past. You were right.
She thought of the coffin drives and the fetch counselor, both asking for and offering help.
Perhaps it's something we both need to do. For Dita's sake. Neither of us want to lose him.
Ambrose gave a heavy sigh.
Oh, Leela.
All right, I'll take you there. And when we find Dita, I'm going to give him the most almighty bollocking for getting us into this. Leela smiled.
Yeah, me too.
Chapter 11. They jumped directly to the satellite. For a moment, there was darkness and an impression of great velocity. Then the world returned. Leela's senses told her that they'd moved into a fully virtual environment. Understanding that helped her deal with the sudden, destabilizing shock of the jump.
This place is a simulation, she told herself. Of course we jumped. It's the only way to get in here.
They were standing in a bland corridor studded with round windows. Fluorescent tubes cast dead light down on beige walls and a soft pale carpet. There was a door in front of them. It was made of dark, heavy wooden planks, crisscrossed with rivet-studded iron bands. An iron handle hung over a large, dark keyhole. A little wire mesh covered a square, eye-level window. The door represented a port into the satellite's internal systems. The corridor behind them, the digital trail they'd followed to step into them. So, Dita's weave self stopped here?
Yes, said Ambrose. For half an hour or so.
He looked back, nervously. The corridor behind them was empty. Worried that Diodatus will spot us? Asked Leela. And send some pressure men after us? It'd be nice to actually see one again. Maybe we could get him to answer some questions.
Be careful what you wish for, chided Ambrose. Anyway, that shouldn't be a problem. The buffer cell should keep us hidden.
Getting caught might actually make things easier. They could take us straight to the boss.
No, Leela, Ambrose told her firmly. The one thing we know for sure about Diodatus is that it's very secretive.
We really don't want it to know how close we're getting. It might take fright and hide itself properly. We'd be back to square one again. Leela glanced out of one of the windows. There was deep sea beyond, blacker than space. She imagined the search engine swimming through it. Did the shark see the corridor? She asked.
Oh, no. It doesn't need it. The deeps are its natural home. The corridor's just for us.
He bent to examine the door.
This must be the entry point to the satellite's internal systems.
There was a hollow thud as he knocked his fist against it. Can you open it?
Let me activate my intrusion package.
Leela smiled when it appeared.
Cute, she said.
The intrusion package was about the size of two clenched fists. A delicate little fringe waved around the sides and rear of its oval, neon, bright body. Finger-length tentacles reached out from the front of its head. Two held straight up to scent the air, the other five drifting lazily on invisible data currents. Alert little eyes with black, W-shaped pupils sat on either side of a little skull bump.
"It's a cuttlefish," explained Ambrose. "Highly intelligent, a very delicate spatial manipulator, and extremely sensitive to local stimuli."
He touched two fingers to its straight tentacles.
"Hello," he said. "Haven't seen you for a while."
Patterns of light pulsed across its skin.
"So, can you unlock the door for us, little fellow?"
The cuttlefish drifted down to the door handle and hung in front of it. Tentacles reached out and explored the keyhole.
"I'd forgotten how fond I am of this little chap," Ambrose said.
Leela touched one of the iron bands. A shimmer rippled around her finger. Then the illusion was whole again. She peered through the mesh. There was nothing but blackness on the other side. Water dripped, each drop calling up a tiny echo. A musty smell clogged her mind with thoughts of age and decay.
"Seems pretty grim in there," she commented. "No updates for centuries," replied Ambrose, standing back up. "Dormant tech."
"How long's it going to take?" asked Leela.
Ambrose was looking back down the corridor. "Nothing behind us."
He peered out into the depths.
"Nothing out there."
He sounded worried. The cuttlefish disengaged from the lock.
Ambrose tipped his head as if listening, then turned to Leela. "Well, it's a tough one. The door only opens for certain specific weave selves. The cuttlefish can unlock it, but it's going to take some time."
"How long?"
Ambrose looked simultaneously embarrassed and relieved. Not much more than a couple of weeks, usually."
He looked back down the corridor again.
"We shouldn't linger here, Leela. We don't know what might find us."
Shit. Everything had been going so well. She'd been so sure they'd find Dieter straight away.
Frustrated, she balled her hand into a fist and brought it down on the door.
It shimmered again, for a moment wanting to be unreal. "Ambrose, this door, you said it opens for specific weave selves." He turned back towards her.
"Yes."
"Watch this." She knocked on the door. Her fist made no sound. The point where she touched it became, for a second, not quite present, then returned to full solidity. "You see?"
Ambrose was fascinated, fear vanishing as curiosity took over. "Do that again."
Leela did, and the door wavered again.
"You and Dieter share a lot of memories, don't you?" he asked.
Leela remembered lying next to Dieter when she was rebuilding herself. Her past was a confusion of unconnected moments. He'd shown her his vision of it, and she'd used it as a roadmap to rebuild her own memory chains, pulling them all back into coherence. She'd even copied some of his memory blocks directly into her mind to replace one she'd lost to the plague.
"Yes," she said. "Far more than most people. It's picking that up when you knock. It thinks you're him and part opens. Then it runs a deeper scan, sees the full shape of your weave self, realizes you're not, and locks back up."
He beamed, then started a detailed technical explanation of how he'd now be able to open the door in a couple of days. Leela let him ramble on as she unhooked the necklace from round her neck. She held it up in front of him. He barely noticed.
"Ambrose," she said.
Then again, more firmly, "Ambrose!" He stopped talking, his eyes losing their distant focus and finding her again.
"Look at this."
She let the lightning bolt spin round.
"It's a three-dimensional representation of the shape of Dieter's weave self. Can the cuttlefish use it to make a key?" "Oh. Oh, yes, yes, I think it can. You knock, the door queries, we show it this, and bingo."
Tentacles reach for the pendant. Leela watched the cuttlefish analyze it. She was surprised at how much she felt the pendant's absence. She hadn't taken it off since she'd created it. After a couple of minutes, the pendant dropped to the floor.
Ambrose scooped it up and passed it back to Leela. The cuttlefish re-engaged with the lock as Leela slipped the pendant back on. Ambrose nodded and Leela touched the door. It shimmered again. The cuttlefish flickered, colours dancing across it. The shimmer spread out across the whole of the door, then all of a sudden there was no door, only an archway giving onto an ancient passageway. Air heavy with damp and rot gusted out. Ambrose gave a triumphant whoop.
Fantastic! And if they've got other locks that work like this, we'll be able to walk straight through them. Well done!
He looked overjoyed. There was no trace of fear. Leela imagined him as he must have been before Cormac's tragedy, striding through the deep past with his two closest friends beside him. It was such a pleasure to see that side of him returning.
Come on, he said, stepping through the arch.
The cuttlefish was already beyond it, a phosphorescent ghost hanging in the void. Ambrose reached into his pocket and pulled out two torches.
Everything's very old through here, he told Leela. Decayed, unpredictable. So we're not going to run a full simulation of it.
He clicked his torch on. A yellow circle of light danced across damp stone floors, crumbling brick walls.
These let us look at it in a much simpler way. We can still see where we're going, and we'll be a lot less likely to trigger anything nasty.
Why would Diodatus use this place?
I don't know. Perhaps because it's so out of the way. Maybe this is camouflage and it'll all get a bit more up-to-date further on.
The corridor was long, straight and low. There were no more doors. Every so often they passed pointed arches carved into the walls, framing darkness. Leela shone her torch into the first few, wondering if there were doors, but the light only showed more brickwork.
Broken links, commented Ambrose. Would have led somewhere once, not anymore.
The damp stones were hard beneath Leela's feet and the cold, still air chilled her. It was like walking through a tomb.
Neither of them said much. Every so often Leela looked back. Their silver cords led away into the gloom, reassuring Lynx back to the known.
The corridor ended in another pointed arch. This one was open. Leela stepped through it into a high, round room and shone her torch around. It was about 15 meters across and 20 meters high. The round walls were punctured by three layers of high arched doorways, some bricked up, some full only of darkness. A dome rounded out of the ceiling above them. A circular opening lay directly underneath it. The cuttlefish hung over it.
Is that where they took Dieter? She asked.
Ambrose nodded, but his attention was elsewhere.
Look at that, he breathed, staring up into the dome. Something gold gathered the light and glimmered it back at them. Amazing.
Leela looked up too. Her torch beam joined his. Definition blossomed and she saw a stylized image of a young man. He was dressed in scarlet robes and held a pair of dividers and a laser stylus. His face was sketched out in gold. He sat against a dark background pricked with golden stars. A logo that seemed to be based on the letter M hung above his right shoulder.
Now that's someone you don't see much of anymore, said Ambrose. He's one of the original pantheon gods.
Dieter used to talk about them.
She gazed up at history.
All seems so distant, so irrelevant.
She let herself drift for a moment, remembering her brother's enthusiasm.
There were 12, weren't there? Back when we broke free from Earth?
Ambrose nodded.
And now 7 of them are gone.
Leela remembered East, sitting on her bed, radiating power. It seemed impossible that an entity like her could ever fall.
How?
Well, you saw how Kingdom went. The Totality moved in and took over most of his systems when his core was smashed. And you remember how Grey's structure decayed while he slept? His corporate body torn apart, limbs scattered around station, because there was nothing left to hold them together. The rest went the same way, strong-armed out of existence. Aggressive takeovers, mostly.
He looked back up at the dome.
Kingdom seized this one. He was always pretty ambitious. If Jack Forster and Hugo Fist hadn't done their thing, he'd have taken two more gods by now. He was pretty much running Grey's legacy systems, and he was winding up to absorb Sandal, too. I never knew.
The gods don't like us to. They want to seem eternal and unchanging, so they don't mention it. They just rebrand and let us forget. And we do, far too easily. The truth of the past disappears. People like us know, but nobody else really cares about it all. Which, if you ask me, is a crying shame.
So, who was this guy?
A god of construction and heavy engineering, said Ambrose, reverence filling his voice. He built the out-system hubs. Farafra Station, Siwa Station, everything around and beyond. All down to him. Then Kingdom took him over. Took the credit for it all.
What was he called?
Mikhail.
The name hung in the air.
For a moment, it reverberated as an echo. And then it became something more, as the gold lines that defined the image of Mikhail blazed into life. They became a kind of fire, hanging at the heart of the dome. And then the stars around him caught fire too. The fire leapt out, dancing across the whole of the dome. It was like a slow, silent explosion.
That's beautiful, breathed Leela.
It kept spreading, raining down from the ceiling to fill the whole room, falling against the arches so that one by one they lit up too. The cuttlefish drifted upwards, tentacles fanned out. Ambrose's face was suffused with joy.
His brand iconography's booting up, he whispered back. This is original stuff.
He concentrated for a moment.
600 years old, according to the date stamp. Almost as old as the box. We're definitely on the right track.
Are we safe?
Asked Leela. Oh, yes, replied Ambrose. This is drawing on a local server. It's not trying to make any wider connections. And my defenses have already checked it out. There's no malware hidden within it.
He gestured towards the cuttlefish.
It's keeping an eye out, just in case.
Then the music began. First there was one voice, then three or four, then perhaps a dozen. They twined in and out of each other, hushing and then building up again in increasingly powerful crescendos. Their soft, intricate interplay spoke of harmony and order, of logic and reason, of group structures that were so much richer than anything any one person could ever achieve. The choir sang out in increasingly powerful pulses as more and more voices joined in, and the song grew to both describe and embody vast human achievements. Chasing melodies through it, Leela found visions of great engineering projects shifting and evolving in her mind's eye. They grew in scale until they showed her a series of physical platforms for one vast, harmonious society, stretched out across the whole of the solar system, glowing with brilliant, endlessly sustainable life. At last, the music pulsed to a final climax. The room was all fire now. Wonder filled Leela. Mikhail was something entirely new to her. His branding had never been used to sell her anything, to force her to acknowledge achievements that the reality of her life denied. She had never experienced it as propaganda, so she was free to enjoy it as a piece of pure art. The vision of ordered, harmonious, immortal structure it shared was intoxicating, but it was tragic too. Because all that Leela knew of Mikhail was that he was gone and completely forgotten. Glancing over at Ambrose, Leela saw tears on his face.
I'm not afraid anymore, he said.
It's gone.
I just remember why we used to come to places like this.
Gods, I've missed it. Leela squeezed the pendant until its sharp edges stung her. Regret filled her. She'd been so dismissive of the Lazarus crew, but she'd have loved to share a moment like this with her brother. And she would. She promised herself, once she'd brought him back from Diodatus. As loss and hope combined within her, The fire and the song began to sicken.
Jagged shards of static shattered through the music, breaking its harmony. The flames flickered in and out of existence.
Glitches tore at her eyes as the room bounced between two states, flaring out of vision until it became impossible to see anything. A vast industrial clamour took over from the perfect vision of Mikhail's ordered cosmos.
"Servers dying," Ambrose whispered. "Spinning out of control. Cuttlefish is shutting it down."
The last thing she saw was words, written in a text that was both somehow familiar and illegible, hanging over every single one of the arches which surrounded them. There was a single short word above the opening in the floor, burning far brighter than all the rest. One last blinding flare flashed out, and then they were back in the cold, dark room. The faintest suggestion of gold hung in the gloom above them, a reminder of a divine brand experience that could never be repeated.
"What did all the words say?" asked Leela.
"Station standard language. But Mikhail's font is centuries out of date. Very difficult to read if you're not used to it."
"I'll say."
"Basically, they were destinations. This must have been one of Mikhail's digital movement hubs. If you were fully virtual, like us, you could use it to get anywhere."
Ambrose's voice echoed in the dark, empty space.
"The open doors will lead to places that are still there. Baharaya Station, Farafara Station, Siwai Station. There'll be doors to Station 1, Station 2, and Station 3. We think that's what they used to call Docklands, the Wart and Homelands. And the blocked ones go to places that just don't exist anymore."
"And what did the word over the pit in the floor say?"
"Well, that's the funny thing. The pit only had a descriptor, and it's the first time I've ever seen it."
"What did it say?"
"Something very simple. All in capitals. Down." Chapter 12. It was easy to remember the moments before the fall. The cuttlefish pulsed excitedly, and Ambrose said, "They took Dieter into the pit, and they left a record of the jump behind. We can go straight to wherever he ended up." Then he told the cuttlefish to take them down. But after that, there was no coherence. It was as if not just space, but time itself had fractured. Leela could remember individual moments, but they were jumbled together in her mind like playing cards in a well-shuffled deck. She glimpsed a white tower, wreathed in green. There was a plunge through darkness, moving first down, then, after a sudden brutal stop, sideways. The cuttlefish pulsed red and squealed out an alarm, but she couldn't stop herself from falling. She clutched Ambrose as wind roared past them, then her empty hand grasped nothing. Brilliant light flared, and she squeezed her eyes shut, howling with the shock of it all. And then it all stopped. For a moment, there was nothing for Leela's senses to show her. Then fresh data leapt into them, and place reappeared around her. She was lying on her back on a cold, hard floor, her arms and legs splayed out, her eyes still closed. She let nothing happen for a minute or so. There was no more movement, no more chaotic bursts of sound and light. Her new environment was apparently stable. She opened her eyes. Her cord rose up to the ceiling. She was relieved to see that it hadn't turned red. She lay between a wall and a long, low table, softly lit by pale silver light from a wall of windows. There were shelves above her. She couldn't see what was on them. A shapeless mass of clothing lay just next to her. She nudged it and it groaned. It was Ambrose. "Fucking hell," he said.
His cord was also intact.
"Are you all right?"
"I'll live."
He sat up and winced.
"Oh, my head."
He rubbed his eyes.
"We traveled a long way. Must be on a different satellite."
The cuttlefish popped into being in front of him and touched a tentacle to his forehead. A moment's silence, then he sighed with relief.
"Well, I'm uncorrupted," he told Leela.
The cuttlefish swam across to Leela. "Better let it check you." Its tentacle was cold against her skin. She experienced the little programmer's query as a shiver that ran through her whole body.
You're fine, confirmed Ambrose. Great. Now, let's work out where we've ended up.
The cuttlefish rose between them, all tentacles stretched out.
It's scanning, Ambrose said.
A moment, then...
Everything we can see is virtual. We're either inside a server somewhere or in a real space that's been entirely overlaid with Weave content. And we're at least 500 kilometers from our last location.
Leela stood, seeking a better view of the room. Ambrose muttered something technical about more precise location checks, as much to himself as to her. Leela didn't really take it in, because she was suddenly overjoyed.
We found him, she breathed. We found Dieter.
Really? Replied Ambrose as he staggered to his feet. Ah, he continued. I think you're right. Leela, Ambrose, and the cuttlefish were at one end of a long, narrow space, filled with stripped pine tables. Windows ran down white stone walls, with pale shelves climbing up between them. And the tables and shelves were filled with all the virtual clutter that had once filled Dieter's weave space. There was a vacuum tube here, a set of yellowed dials there, Bakelite knobs beneath a dusty television screen, antique keyboards with cracked keys held up by slim, black, moulded metal stalks. Leela recognized none of the instruments individually, but taken as a whole, the style was unmistakable. Dieter loved collecting vintage weave objects. He dressed up his own exploration and analysis apps to look like them. The room was full of his work. A moment for emotions to surge through her. Relief, anger, hope, fear. And then Leela forced herself to focus. Past the windows, there was a doorway which led into another room. She set off towards it. Wait a second, called Ambrose. Best to be cautious. Run some more safety checks. Work out exactly where we are.
Leela ignored him. She glanced out of the windows as she passed them. They gave on to a silent, shiny cityscape. Off-white clouds hung in a black sky, lit by the pale glow of a moon. There was a broad, open street, bounded by a long, low colonnade of simple, elegant pillars, and a high wall punctuated with empty doorways. In the distance there was an open piazza, a fountain dancing at its centre. Under the moonlight, all seemed whiter than it should be. All was perfectly symmetrical, carved out of the night with sharp, clean lines. All, that is, except the pale, pastel-coloured bundles that lay everywhere. Leela slowed a little, wondering what they were. At first, she thought they were just fabric, but then she saw pale limbs, and hair, and soft, still faces. The streets were scattered with people. Perhaps they were asleep. Perhaps they were dead. The clothes they wore drew on the same pastel palette as the pressure men's suits. Then, she was through the door into a large, round room. Pure white walls supported a domed ceiling. Panes of glass showed the dark sky. The floor was grey stone. The room was empty but for another stripped pine desk pushed up against one wall. Two occupied couches lying head to head, and her brother, leaning over one of them.
Dieter!
Shouted Leela. He was concentrating deeply and didn't hear her.
Dieter!
She called again as she ran towards him. As he turned, she was on him, hugging him tight. For a moment she lost herself in him, so relieved to have found him. But he didn't return the hug, and he felt wrong. There was a permanent tremor running through him, a soft vibration that made holding him close a profoundly discomforting experience. She stepped back to look at him. He wasn't quite fully present. His body was softly blurred, shifting forwards and backwards between different versions of itself. His face was a shimmer too, never quite settling down. Graphically, he presented a slightly blocky, running at a far lower resolution than was the norm for fetches. She remembered what the fetch counsellor had said.
Only the fetch communion could create true fetches. Soon, this flawed version of him would start to corrupt his weave self, breaking the chains that held his past together.
Leela, what are you doing here?
He sounded deeply shocked.
I've come to take you home.
Gods, I can't, I've got work to do.
He gestured towards the figures in the couches. Leela took her first proper look at them. She recognized the two Diodatus beneficiaries, Andre Herrera and Mo Fafanwi, from images from the insect case file. The eating champion's bulk made the psychologist seem tiny. Neither looked alive. Their faces had been simplified, becoming almost caricatures, and the color had been leached out of them until they were almost monochrome. They reminded her of shop window dummies. She recognized the couches, too. They were the ones that Dieter had built to help her heal after the blood and flesh attack.
What happened to them? She asked.
And what are you doing with them?
Dieter ignored the question. How did you find me, Leela?
Ambrose entered the room, the cuttlefish drifting along with him.
Oh, God,
groaned Dieter, looking even more depressed.
Hello there. Ambrose said cheerfully. I helped her. Used one of the sharks. Then we came down through an old kingdom satellite.
He looked around.
This is quite the home you've made for yourself.
Dieter ran a hand through his hair.
You idiots! You're going to screw it all up. That's a bit harsh, said Ambrose cordially. You've got to come back with us, Dieter,
Leela told him.
I can't, he replied, even if I wanted to. I've signed a contract which includes full non-disclosure. Shit! If Diodatus works out you're here, we're fucked!
He looked up at Leela.
I told you not to worry about me. I made sure you wouldn't lose the flat. I set everything up for you. It was all sorted out.
I had to come after you, replied Leela, at once hurt and worried. Running like this. After a month or so, it'll shred your weave self. You'll be truly dead.
Do you think I didn't think of that?
Dieter was exasperated.
I know exactly how fetches work. I rebuilt you, didn't I? That's why they wanted me down here.
He gestured toward the couches.
After they fucked up these two, I'll be back on station in a month.
He thumped his shimmering chest.
Of course this isn't permanent.
You're coming back? Why couldn't you tell me?
I told you. Non-disclosure. Diodatus wants all this kept quiet.
He glanced past Leela.
Ambrose, he called out. Get away from that!
Ambrose was at the desk. It was piled high with drifts of papers. A single piece of paper hung above it, with two names written on it in black pen. He peered at them.
And who are these guys? More victims? Oh, for God's sake!
Dieter marched over and snatched the paper off the wall, crumpling it up.
Nobody's a victim. They're both terminally ill, just like the first two. Their families will do very well out of it.
And they'll be back on station getting ready to become proper fetches in a month or so, just like me. He steered Ambrose back towards the center of the room.
I'm serious. You guys have to go.
Not unless you come with us, replied Leela.
She sounded slightly less decisive than she wanted to. Perhaps Dieter really did have everything under control.
I can't, replied Dieter. Not until I'm done here. You just have to trust me. I've always made the right decisions for us before, haven't I?
Dieter!
Now it was Leela's turn to be exasperated.
Stop being such a big brother. I'm not a little girl. And even when I was, I could look after myself.
You too. God, without my food packets when you were squatting, you'd have starved.
Dieter looked suitably abashed.
So perhaps all this is going to work out fine. Perhaps being here is a brilliant decision. But all I can see is something that looks deeply, deeply dodgy. I want you out of this place and back home.
She's right, chirped in Ambrose. All this is a bit odd, you know.
He wandered over to a window.
Lovely place, very tasteful, but rather bleak.
It's all sorted out, sighed Dieter. I'm fine. I'm doing good work here, and I'll be back home as soon as possible. Big things are going to happen, and we'll be loaded. you want to convince me of that, you've got to tell us what on earth is going on.
Dieter sighed. And you won't go anywhere unless I do, will you?
Leela imagined him remembering decades of similar conversations. Once she'd made up her mind, she was usually immovable. She shook her head. No.
Oh, dear.
He leant back against one of the couches.
Okay. I'll tell you what I can.
He stopped to think for a moment.
So, you're right. I'm down here because of dear Datus. Oh, and he's not an it. He's a he. He's very old, and he's very powerful. And he knows a lot more about the past than we do.
He wants to share that knowledge. Dieter's eyes gleamed. You won't believe what he's got to tell us.
So, he's going to leave this place and come to station, and I'm helping him.
And then he stopped. Leela and Ambrose waited expectantly.
Well, that's it, Dieter told them.
Haven't really told us anything, said Leela accusingly.
Dieter looked helpless.
I can't, Leela. Can't you even let us know where we are?
I'm afraid not. I mean, this place is the Shining City, but that's just my name for it. I can't tell you what it's really called or where it really is.
He grinned excitedly.
It'll blow your mind when you find out.
Dangerous things come from the past, said Ambrose seriously. I hope you're being careful.
Oh, everything's fine.
Dear Datus is perfectly trustworthy. Are you sure?
Ambrose looked haunted.
You're being very casual about all this. Remember Cormac, old man?
What do you mean? Asked Dieter. Has something happened to him?
No.
Ambrose shook his head, sounding worried.
Nothing's changed.
Then what's the problem?
Dieter was genuinely baffled.
I mean, him and the family, everything's great, isn't it? Haven't seen them for a while, but we're all busy these days. Hardly any time for Lazarus Crew stuff anymore.
Now Leela was worried too. His family died, she said. It's why you and Ambrose stopped exploring.
His family are fine.
Dieter looked mystified. I stopped all that because I had to look after you.
You really don't remember?
Asked Leela, suddenly wondering how much of her brother stood before her. Dieter shook his head. Ambrose suddenly looked very serious.
Can you remember Holt? He asked.
Sure,
replied Dieter, looking a little puzzled.
One of Insect's anti-terror people. He kept an eye on us when everyone thought we might be terrorists, digging a bit too far into station's infrastructure.
No. He's one of their antiquities experts. He kept an eye on us because the gods are scared shitless of the psychoactive technologies that we could have found. That Cormac did find.
Dieter started to look nervous.
You're making that up, he said.
He's not,
Leela told him. Disquiet pulsed through her.
An artifact killed Cormac's family. Psychoactive artifacts can rewrite minds. The past left a lot of scary stuff out there.
I haven't been out in the field for years, added Ambrose. Too scared of what I might lose.
He turned to Leela.
This is why he's helping Dio Datus, he told her.
He can't remember what it might lead to.
She turned back to Dieter. He shimmered in front of her, worry pulsing across version after version of himself.
The Fetch Counselor warned me about this. Dear Datus has wiped some of your memories and rewritten other ones. He's made you forget just how dangerous very old things can be.
Worry gave her voice an edge.
He's using you, Dieter!
That can't be true.
Why would we lie to you? Asked Leela.
Why would Dear Datus? Dieter hit back. But there was fear in his voice. Leela welcomed the fear. They were getting through to him.
Because he needs you. She wanted to grab him and shake him and yell at him. But she'd never been able to make him do anything. And if you knew the truth, whatever it is, you wouldn't help him. You have to come back with us, Dieter. Tell us what's really going on.
She put as much force into her voice as she could.
He's changing you!
His memories made him himself.
He could lose so much. We really can't trust Diodatus, Ambrose said. Look at what he's done to you. Leela's right.
He looked around nervously. The workroom and the city beyond it were as serene as ever.
We all have to get out of here. Right now. I can't leave, snapped Dieter, fear becoming defensiveness. I made a deal. And of course we can trust him. If we couldn't... If he's as dangerous as you say, well, I'd be building him an army. And that's absurd.
An army? Asked Leela, disbelieving.
You might be building him an army.
She glanced over at Ambrose. He looked profoundly shocked.
What are you really up to down here, Dieter?
And that was when the pressure men attacked.
Chapter 13. The flies came first, a dark swarm shooting across the room like a blurred fist. They crashed straight through Dieter and he froze. Then they were on Ambrose.
Get out! He yelled.
Then his shields went up and he was silver.
Oh, crap, thought Leela.
She stepped back, instinctively calling her skull face into being.
She'd only just found her brother. She didn't want to leave him.
There was an angry, roaring buzz. Then Ambrose's shields dropped away, puddling beneath him like a pool of mercury. He took a step back, thrashing at himself, his skin dotted with crawling insects. Leela ran towards him and tried to help him, but her fingers just went through them.
Crash out! He shouted again. Once they finish with me, they'll come for you!
He staggered backwards, then fell over.
I can feel them! He howled. Inside me!
Ambrose's cord flashed to red. The cuttlefish leapt into her mind, alarms wailing as it fled the attack. She hushed it as she ran to Dieter. She tried to shake him, but her hands went through him. He'd been frozen, pulled out of time just as he turned to see what his friends were looking at. Leela tried to slap him, but her hand slipped through him too.
Fuck, she said to herself.
Then two pressure men burst in. The first one took her at a run, throwing himself onto her. He was fully weave-enabled. His attack systems forced his presence on her. He could touch her, hurt her. She collapsed under his weight, his rings cutting into her hands, his medallion hard against her chest, stubble scouring her cheek like a weapon. There was the cologne stench again, and something else beneath it, the thin, high reek of decay. She fell and skidded backwards with him on top of her. She brought her knee up between his legs, but it made no difference. His weight crushed movement out of her. Then her skull face was ready. And she hit him with it. He arced his back, howled and rolled off her. Hands clamped over his ears, eyes tight shut. She kicked him in the mouth as she stood and felt a surprising softness. The other approached her. There was murder on his face. He balled his fists. It would take 15 seconds or so for her skull face to lock onto his virtual senses, build an assault package and break him. In the meantime, he could cause her pain. She backed away from him. Ambrose winked out of existence, vanishing back to his room. Relief flooded her until the flies rose up. They'd broken straight through Ambrose's armor. They'd break straight into her, too. She remembered the flesh and blood plague tearing its way into her. She couldn't risk being broken again. This time she wouldn't have Dieter to heal her.
I'm sorry, she breathed as she started her exit countdown. I'll come back.
She turned and started to run. The flies were behind her. Then the second pressure man.
Dieter was an uncaring statue.
She jumped ahead, reappearing halfway down the storeroom, still running. Fear of her pursuers erased any shock at the jump. There was an infuriated buzzing from behind her. She looked out of the window at the shining city and tried to leap there. But this jump failed, denied by the local weave. The pressure man entered the storeroom and cackled. There was no other exit. Her skull face was almost ready. Perhaps now they had the measure of it. She hit the wall and turned to face her pursuer. Two more appeared behind him, all pastel suits and snarling faces. The flies were ahead of them all. Leela switched the skull face to multiple targeting. Testing it out at last, she thought. It would have a weaker but still damaging impact on its targets.
She felt its systems grind away and wished it worked more quickly. The flies exploded around her. A swarm shot through with a hard, artificial glitter. Leela thought of jewels, of electrical components. The cuttlefish screamed danger in her mind. The flies were a prickling on her skin. First one, then several, then uncountable numbers landed on her. Tiny creatures that burned into her like acid, tearing first at her skin and then at her mind. She sank to her knees, swearing and brushing at herself. The skull face flared readiness, and she pulsed out an attack. She wasn't sure what it did to the pressureman. It didn't affect the flies. Her exit countdown crawled downwards. She wanted to scream. Perhaps she should risk just shutting herself down. But before she could, a firm hand grabbed her and pulled her to her feet. There was a hissing sound. A cool mist settled around her head. A metallic taste suffused her mouth, and the flies began to drop off.
"What is this bread-haired shit?" her rescuer drawled. "Be cool. You're good."
Rough hands brushed at her face and hair. She felt the swarm's touch on her skin lessen, the pressure on her mind fall back.
"Keep your eyes closed," the voice said. "One more hit of fly killer."
"What about the pressure men?"
"The guys on the floor? Oh, you fucked them up good and proper. For the next minute or so, at least."
Another hissed, and she felt more cold liquid. It soothed the last of the little hooked legs away. The flies died into stillness, becoming tiny weights that fell with a dry rustle as Leela brushed at herself.
"All fixed. You can open your eyes now."
Her rescuer wore round, mirrored sunglasses. A tight little moustache pointed out from beneath a hawkish nose. A triangular beard sharpened his chin. Cheekbones cut up towards neat sideburns. He'd pulled his steel grey hair back into a ponytail. He wore a tie-dyed T-shirt that had once, long ago, been molten with primary colours, a faded pair of jeans, and a tool belt. One hand held a spray bottle. He smiled.
"You're not from round here," he said.
"Who are you?" gasped Leela. "Where is here?"
"Oh, I guess I'm a caretaker."
The three pressure men stirred. The caretaker nodded towards them.
"Diodatus adapts pretty quickly. Every time you use that weapon of yours, it'll be less effective."
He peered towards the end of the room.
"More of 'em coming."
He tossed the spray bottle to Leela.
"More flies, too. Zap 'em."
It felt about a quarter full. There was a broom leaning against the wall. He grabbed it.
"I'll take those dudes."
He hefted it in his hand like a weapon.
"Hold 'em back till we can get out of here."
"With a broom?"
"It's not the tool, it's how you use it."
He pointed to his forehead.
"This is what you really fight with."
"Can we get my brother?"
"The frozen guy in the main room?"
She nodded.
"We'll see. Might have to beat a retreat. Come back when all's quieter."
He sounded deeply relaxed about the whole situation. The closest pressure man was back on his feet. Leela had her first good look at him. He was, she guessed, about the same age as her, but the resonances of his clothing made him seem much more mature. He leapt towards them. The caretaker took him in the forehead with the broom.
"In your face, brother," he yelled,
very clearly enjoying himself. Their attacker collapsed. The caretaker planted a heel in his chest and leapt for the second one. Holding the broom in two hands, he swung it in a high arc and brought it down like an axe. The brush smacked into the pressure man's head, and he too went down. The third one dropped into a crouch. The caretaker spun the broom in his hand.
"You know, I'm usually a pacifist," he drawled. "Just not today."
Leela didn't see how the fight ended. Her vision shimmered and the room glitched out. She'd forgotten the countdown. 5, it read, then 4. Then there were black specks everywhere. Maybe flies, maybe the local weave shutting down.
"I'm going back," she shouted. "Where is this place? How do I find it again?"
But there was no reply.
for she was falling through darkness, and the room she'd been in was just a memory. Ambrose's systems crashed her back into her flat. All of a sudden, she was back in her own living room, panting hard and needing to vomit, a bottle of fly spray clutched in one shaking hand. Her head ached. Back in Docklands, it was very late at night. The flat was shockingly quiet. She felt like she'd just escaped from a nightmare. She reeled across the room, knocking against Dieter's little grey shrine. A tiny avatar of the god appeared like a sickness hallucination. His voice was a rasping buzz.
"I see your expenses management apps need upgrading. Let me help you with that," he chirped.
Leela nodded yes to shut him up, staggered past him and collapsed against the doorframe. The flat's messaging system babbled about a message. It played automatically. Cassiel talked about the two Dear Datus beneficiaries.
"I can't find any links between them," she said. "I'm going to keep digging."
Leela wondered what Cassiel would make of Dieter's workshop, deep in the Shining City. She still didn't know what he was really up to down there. If the worst were true, he might be raising an army for Dear Datus. She couldn't think how he'd do that. For now, she felt too broken to speculate. Fear shot through her. His captor had already taken some of his memory. She wanted to get back out, to try and find him. First, she'd lie down for a moment and recover herself. She staggered down the hall and into her bedroom. It swayed around her. It had always been such a safe space. In the back of her mind, she felt the cuttlefish curled up in terror. She thought of Ambrose and imagined him falling back into his body. She hoped his buffer self had protected him. She jumped to his office as soon as she felt a little better. She collapsed queasily onto the bed. She clutched the fly spray to her. The sheets felt harsh. They reminded her of stubble. It was worse than any hangover she'd ever had. She found that she couldn't move. And then she discovered that she'd never left the nightmare. Three loud bangs came from the corridor. Then there was a splintering crash. She imagined the front door torn from its hinges. She wanted to stand, to jump, to flee. But something had reached into her core self and frozen her. There were footsteps in the passageway. As the handle turned and the door to her bedroom opened, there was a soft buzzing. A shadow became a man as it stepped into the light from the street outside. It was the pressure man from the hospital, dressed in yesterday. Her very earliest memory leapt to mind. Her father, when he'd still been there, coming to kiss her goodnight. Here was his dark opposite, breaking into her most intimate space. The pressure man pulled his shirt open to the waist. There was a square void beneath his ribcage. The skin around its edges was sticky with decay. He smiled as the flies leapt out of it. Once again, she felt their hard legs scratch first at her flesh and then at her mind. This time she couldn't move. The skull face refused her summons. The swarm swatted away her defense librarians. And then it was inside her, ripping at her past.
Chapter 14. Leela was in one of Dieter's workrooms. He was standing next to a pile of closed-circuit television screens. Grey images flickered across them, showing her fragments of the flat.
"Hello, Leela," Dieter said, smiling. "Some pretty nasty paralysis code in you. Don't worry, I've stripped it all out."
Leela still had the fly spray in her hand. She raised it like a weapon, scanning the room as she did so.
"Are you real?" she asked him. "Are they using you against me?"
There were no flies. The scratching in her mind had gone.
"Are we safe?"
She felt memories of the blood and flesh plague rise up within her. She pushed them back down. She couldn't let the past distract her from the present. Dieter took one of her elbows in each hand, staring intently into her eyes and ignoring the fly spray.
"No, I'm not," he said. "And yes, you are."
Leela wondered if she should spray him, but she wasn't sure what sort of effect it would have. She might be wasting a dose. And he'd released her from paralysis. It was hard to believe that he was an artifact of the pressure man's attack.
"Where are we?"
"The Shining City,"
What? Dieter looked confused.
No, we're still in the flat. The secret part of it.
But you're gone, Dieter.
Oh, I see, he laughed. I'm not the real Dieter. I'm just a defense system, keeping you safe from whoever's out there, until the real Dieter can deal with him. He gestured to a screen. The intruder stood in her bedroom. Do you recognize him?
Yes, people like him. Pressuremen. They've been following me, attacking me.
Fear still gripped her.
Are you sure we're safe?
Of course. Though this pressure man is a serious customer. He's broken most of the flat's defences, broken you too. Or, rather, what he thinks is you.
Leela could only stare. She hoped desperately that this wasn't all an illusion.
Her rescuer chuckled. He's actually attacking a copy.
Like a buffer self, she asked.
She remembered the blood and flesh attack. They'd broken into her memories too. She felt none of that violence in her mind now.
Pretty much. Only it's not linked back to you, so you're perfectly safe. There's no way he can reach us in here.
He was so proud to be protecting her. Grief shifted tectonically within her. She must have looked shocked.
He became serious. You really are safe, Leela. The real Dieter built all this to take care of you, and it has done.
He never told me.
She remembered how high-handed Dieter could be with his little sister.
Which, to be honest, is not a surprise.
As she spoke, she ran diagnostics on herself. All seemed to be in order. Perhaps this new version of him was telling the truth. And if he was what he claimed to be, there was something he needed to know.
Sit down, she told him.
What's wrong, Leela?
Please, just sit.
He reached for a stool and sunk onto it. She found another and perched next to him, surprised at how much sadness she suddenly felt.
What's the matter? He asked.
All that was most loving and unselfish in him rose up.
Why are you so upset? It was so hard to say. Your physical self is dead.
Oh, he replied, sitting back. A moment of sadness, then,
but he'll be back. 6 months,